Welcome to this very special edition of The Stack. It's time to escape. Today on the show, we head to Spain, where we interview the editor-in-chief of AD Spain. We also head to the United States to speak to the founder of Wild Sand, who publishes exquisite travel guides from American cities. And finally, a new Gestalten book discussing a trend that we are seeing more and more in the publishing world, dreamscapes. Enjoy. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, and I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco. In this week's show, every single one of our interviews will take you somewhere different, a little escape, especially for the many of us that have been isolated in our homes in recent months. We'll start in Spain. A pleasure to welcome back to The Stack the editor-in-chief of AD Spain, the delightful Spanish version of Architecture Digest. With a sunny disposition, the new July-August issue pops out in the newsstand with the words Verano in bold. I spoke to the title's editor-in-chief, Enrique Pastor, about publishing a magazine during lockdown and why he's very much looking forward to the summer.
Basically, we wanted to make a tribute to the Mediterranean way of life, that unbeatable summer that it's inside of us, that when we close our eyes during the winter time, we think about this magical views of the sea, this sun that we are used to live with all year long, and these long siestas that we used to take here by the Mediterranean. So that was the main intention. During the lockdown, we published another issue that the main title was Thank You Home. I don't know if you can read it here. So basically, we did an homage to the house that we were living in, just realizing how to make it better and how to say thank you to these four walls that has protected us during lockdown. And then for the summer issue, we wanted really to escape, to change scenarios and to go outdoor and see the beauty of the nature that was taking place outside our houses, and we didn't realize how beautiful the outdoor is. So we wanted to stay very close in Spain, so we basically choose projects done in Cádiz, in Mallorca, or in Girona, that is a very beautiful coast part of Catalonia. So, and we chose another locations by the Mediterranean, like Sicily or the Cyclades Islands in Greece. So we wanted to stay close and to think everybody wants to, here in Spain, we all, our main industry is sun and fun and gastronomy, and we want that to get back to normal as soon, or to the new normal as soon as we can, so everybody is thinking in that and make their efforts, the society or the media, just to have this back.
And Enrique, how was to make a magazine under the lockdown? I'm sure there's been a lot of challenges, especially the people that have been talking here on The Stack. But I'm so glad that you guys continue then producing amazing issues. And I think especially I'm glad I'm talking to you, a magazine like AD Spain, because, you know, people are caring more about their homes. You know, they had to stay more where they live. So things become more important, you know, because it's about quality of life as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. I think being at home for so long has made us aware of the domestic space, its virtues and its shortcomings. So as I mentioned, these four walls has always been the main theme of AD. We know that we are talking about, but our homes have become the stage of everything from family life to social, to work, entertainment, everything. So we think that the interior design and the decoration must inevitably be reconfigured. So adapted to the new needs and to take in account another aspect as flexibility or sustainability. So we, from the lockdown, we started a diary on our website. Each day, a member of the team just wrote about an aspect of the home that he didn't realize before and things they want to improve, just to make people get inspiration from our point of view and our experience. So I think that we want to be ahead of the future and present from now how we are going to leave our houses. And that's what we were doing in the lockdown. So it's been very difficult to edit a magazine like AD because you need to enrich your visual culture, just visiting new projects, other homes, and that's things we couldn't do. So we were lucky, we had produced a lot of interiors, and then we managed to produce two or three new stories for the magazine during lockdown with photographers in their own houses, just shooting their own houses. But it's very difficult because we have to wait until 2 days before closing the issue just to see what the social climate would be, just to choose the cover and the main headlines. So it's been very, very similar to working in a daily newspaper. So we have to think every day what to offer, because we have different platforms as your website, social networks. So we were waiting until the last moment just to launch the right content for readers.
And for our listeners, I mean, can you tell us where this picture was taken from the cover? Because, I mean, as I said, it's impressive, the cover. I mean, the whole issue is great.
Actually,
but
this is Greece, a small island by the Cyclades. And it's a house made by two Italians that love mid-modern century pieces. And it's a really, really small house, very old, from the, I think, 17th century. And it is full of iconic pieces of design. So it was taken during midday. So this is why you get this blue color and this typical, like, brown sand from the land around the house.
But the magazine AD Spain, I love how I think the Spanish DNA is so strong in the magazine, and I think, because, you know, a lot of people admire Spain. I think they have, when you mention Spain to people outside, but, you know, it's usually something positive that comes out, as you say, the sun, the siesta, fun stuff, and I think AD kind of represent that. So I have a feeling you might have quite a lot of international readers as well, right? Because it's, I always try to look for a copy here in London of your title.
It's very fun to do this, because when we were approached to launch the magazine in 2005, I was working for a newspaper, El Mundo, that it's like the second, it has the second readership in Spain. And everybody was saying, you have a lot of Architectural Digest editions in the world, why don't you copy the best one and just adapt it to Spain? And we say, no, we can do that. We're very different. We have to adapt and to make a new magazine with a different life. So we chose to do our own design with our own typographies, because, you know, when you launch an edition of a magazine, you always have to be based on the mother magazine, that in our case is the US edition. But we were given a lot of freedom to do whatever we wanted. So we chose to make this kind of very bright images. I don't know if you read Spanish, but all the titles and all the tests have a lot of sense of humor. And it's not, I mean, we are not laughing about the projects, but we always try to have people smile when reading this magazine. It's like if you're having a very nice conversation with something, with a person that is very nice and very sympathetic and makes you laugh a lot. So it's that was the intention.
I can see the sense of humor. For example, in this page here, Radar AD, the Fiesta del Agua, with a lot of kind of, I don't know how to describe, like there's a whale, there's a dolphin, and there's a kind of, which kind of material? That's, it's not even plastic. It's really beautiful.
It is actually made by Loewe, that it's a Spanish craft brand of fashion, and bags and everything. They work everything in leather. And we wanted to call it like some kind of like the foam party that every country in the summer and every beach has, and we call it the water fiesta. So it was very fun to produce this.
That was Enrique Pastor from AD Spain. Their new issue is out now. It's a delight. And now to a trend I've been noticing in recent years, including in the publishing world. A new generation of digital artists are exploring dreamscapes and utopian oases digitally. Freed from the constraints of the physical world, it's an expansion of possibilities for architecture and interior design. Dreamscapes and Artificial Architecture is a new Gestalten title about those imagined interior design in digital art. For more, I spoke to one of the book's editors, Ellie Stuhler.
So this book is sort of exploring a new movement of 3D artists using the tools usually used in the architectural context to create completely imaginary spaces. What we thought was interesting about this was just the way that people were responding to this. Anytime we saw this in the digital context, there's always sort of a very enthusiastic response to it. So clearly there's something there that people are interested in that is resonating, and we wanted to explore it a bit further.
Oh, it is resonating. And as I said, I mean, we're here on the Stack where we talk to a lot of editors of magazines, and I've noticed even in a couple of travel magazines, there was an issue of, I believe, Condé Nast Traveler. And I said, oh, I want to go to that place because the picture was on the cover. But in fact, it was a dreamscape. So it's so interesting that this is getting intertwined even, let's say, on a travel publication.
Yeah. I mean, just before I was speaking to you, I was looking at the Instagram profile of one of the artists who we featured in the book. He's an Australian-based artist called Paul Malinsky. And he posted this photo a few days ago that has sort of been making the rounds and been reposted a lot, but it's essentially this beautiful pink dining set, sort of several of them in a very shallow tropical water. And someone commented on it saying, is this in Greece? And his response was no, on the computer. And I think that's what's so interesting about it, is that you've got these extremely beautiful places that you really want to go to, but you can't because they're not real. And that makes you want to be there even more. And I think one other thing about sort of the travel context that's interesting about these is most of the scenes in the book are completely empty. There's no humans in there. And I think the busier that tourists' destinations get, you know, the more crowded our beaches are and the more crowded our national parks are, et cetera, seeing these unspoiled vistas that you don't have to share with anyone feels all the more powerful as a viewer.
Do you think I might be wrong, but do you think it's a generational thing? Do you think this is a movement that started with perhaps people that are a little bit younger or not necessarily?
I mean, you certainly need a certain digital savviness to do this specific type of work. But I mean, I think a lot of this, of the imagery that we're seeing is very much influenced by the surrealists and by Escher, etc. So you can sort of pinpoint different moments, you know, at the turn of the century, in the 80s, et cetera, where you're seeing kind of similar visuals, but now it's just executed in a different way.
And looking at the beautiful images from your book, I can spot a few trends as well. For example, the color pink, I mean, is very prevalent in there. And also swimming pools. I mean, I guess it's part of the dream, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, I think because this type of work really thrives on social media, it's therefore almost optimized by it. So a few of the trends that you'll already see on Instagram are kind of imbued a little bit more in this work. So there's not really any use in denying that there aren't any patterns that you see throughout the book, because there absolutely are, but we also can't really deny the appeal of these types of patterns.
Very much so. And what about in terms of countries that are doing this? Because there's so many examples here in the book. You have, there's a lovely Yambo Studios, I think they're from Israel. And then you have, Alexis again, he does a fantastic job. Do you see that as this is happening all over the world, or are there a few countries that are perhaps a little bit better?
I mean, kind of both. I mean, with any book that we do, we want to make sure that we are representing as much of the globe as we can. So that was something that in the editing process was part of the consideration. But this is definitely sort of, we're finding this all over the world. But equally, in terms of patterns, there's quite a lot coming out of Spain. If you look through, there's a lot coming from Barcelona. And I mean, perhaps one of the reasons why is you have sort of maybe a bit of a pioneer in this movement is a studio called 6&5. Who have also found a way to really monetize these types of dreamscapes, and they're working with clients. And so sort of them and all their collaborators, it's almost like a little bit of a hub. But because this is happening so much in the digital space, it really it's not really defined by geography.
And another thing that when I see those pictures, it kind of gives you a sense of comfort, strangely. Do you think perhaps that's what also people are looking for? I mean, we've been living, my God, extremely anxious times with COVID-19. Many people actually, in fact, they can't even travel at the moment. So I guess in a way, these images are kind of a very pertinent for the times we live in.
Completely. I mean, a lot of them are just so serene and so peaceful and so pleasant. And so have such a strong mood. But, you know, something that we wanted to look for when we were putting together dreamscapes is, yes, there's the utopian side with the good dreams, but then there's also a bit of like a nightmarish side of it. And sort of towards the middle, you have a few that do feel a little bit dystopian with a bit of a post-civilization feel. There's some by an artist called Philip Hodas, who I believe is based in the Czech Republic, who does these pop culture references where you have a giant Mickey Mouse head that looks like it fell off a ride at Disneyland and then is completely grown over with plants as if something terrible has happened, but we're now this calm afterwards. So it's kind of sort of both sides of that sort of utopia versus dystopia that's kind of represented in the book.
That's a very good point. I just opened the book here very casually and I came across this image from Hayden Clay from the US. And then there's this picture of, I think it looks like a carriage of a train. And then you can see a little bit of water. That's kind of scary. And then there's a sticker say, do not leave.
Yeah. And what's really funny about that, though, is that, like, even though it's this very frightening imagery that, you know, the world is now underwater, the colors they use are so
still pink.
Beautiful. Yeah, it's really pink. And you have this morning light come in. So it's like it's still almost optimistic. So that's why it feels a bit like this sort of calm moment after a disaster has occurred. Yeah, very different from the beautiful, evocative scenes we're seeing elsewhere.
And Ellie, of course, I would like to ask, is this your first book with Gestalten then?
So this is my first book with Gestalten that I've since joining. So I co-edited this book along with our publisher, Robert. But previously I was working as a freelancer, so I was contributing to Gestalten a little bit as well.
It's fantastic. And do you have any more plans or any upcoming books as well? Or?
Yes, we are very busy right now. So for the next list, I'm working on a book about timber architecture that we're really looking forward to. That's going to print in a couple of weeks. We just put a book to print looking at the interiors of surfers around the world, which is a fun topic. That's the second book of a series. Those are the two that I can talk about right now.
That was Ellie Stuhler, and Dreamscapes in Artificial Architecture is out now. And now to the US. Wild Sand Field Guides was founded in 2012 by Taylor Bruce. Their first travel guide was about Nashville, and now they have many other cities in their list of publications, including Atlanta, Los Angeles, Portland. There's also a special collection on the US national parks. The guides themselves are a thing of beauty, pocket-sized and full of history of the places, certainly not only a listing of restaurants. I spoke to Taylor about Wild Sand and where they're heading next.
I'd spent about 6 or 7 years writing for magazines and really just had an itch to start something from scratch and to do so, you know, put my thumbprint on something. And, you know, I sort of viewed travel as something that was, you know, very, you know, near and dear to me. But also I love culture. I love music and food and history and literature. And when I looked at travel guides as a genre, they didn't really catch, you know, they didn't really sort of make me curious and get my attention. And it felt like traveling itself was much more exciting than the books that represented travel. So Wild Sam was very much, you know, a creative endeavor. And it was me bringing something into the world that I didn't think existed and packaging different elements of publishing and writing and approaches to travel coverage that didn't maybe necessarily live together normally. And it very much bootstrapped the first book totally out of savings and did a book about Nashville in Tennessee. And, you know, worked with some fantastic designers and writers. And so we went deep into that town, printed about 3,000 copies and sold through that first print run in about 3 months. And so, you know, I think we hit a sweet spot. There were people out there like me that were just, that loved to travel, but didn't love travel guides. So that's sort of the origin story.
Well, and you're lucky as well that you live in a country full of, you know, distinctive cities with very different DNAs. And I think that there is a market for that, not only perhaps in the US, but I would say even internationally. You know, I'm the kind of man, I don't know the US that well. I would love to explore, for example, to read the guide from Nashville, or tell us about some of the cities that you've been covering.
Yeah, so in the very beginning, we thought, you know, there's a ton of fantastic books about London and about Paris and international travel, but there weren't, while there were, I mean, there certainly were some travel guides about the U.S., it felt like there was more of an opening to dive into cities like Nashville and Austin and Portland and even Brooklyn, you know, going into a specific borough, places, Detroit, places that have a really distinct character and, you know, a sense of place that's very genuine and authentic, a rich history, and not necessarily, it's not just the beautiful and exciting parts of the city. It's also, you know, those broken parts of the city's history, you know, the complexities of life in that place. We that's a big part of Wild Sam, is we want to put kind of the full picture of a place in front of people, because I mean, I've found that the more I know, good and bad, the more connected I feel and the more rich an experience I'm going to have. So yeah, those cities, we're always looking for cities that have that distinct edge. But the reality is every city has that if you look hard enough. So even, you know, if we were to, at some point we'll do a book about, let's say, Dallas, Texas. I live in Austin, Texas, and Austin has that vibe that's like really, you know, it's cool. It's swimming holes and breakfast tacos and Willie Nelson. It has that sort of real distinct feel. And Dallas superficially might not, you know, resonate in someone's mind, but if you push further in, it's very much there. I mean, it has a fascinating blues music history on the east side, and you know, sort of that boom and bust vibe of commerce history in Dallas. It's just all places are interesting if you kind of go far enough in.
And tell us, for our listeners who perhaps never came across one of your guides, what is the format? One thing that I can say that I love the design of the covers. They're very kind of simple, but quite elegant and quite collectible as well.
Yeah, when we were brainstorming the aesthetic of Wild Sam, we wanted them to sort of exist outside of a specific time. So we wanted them to have a simplicity about the look and feel, so that if you glance at it, you're not quite sure what decade they may have come out of. For the city guides, it's that monochromatic. We pick a specific color that feels like there's a story there for that place. So we just did a book about Atlanta, and the color we chose for the cover was based on the brick color of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s home church, Ebenezer Baptist, which obviously there's some connection there to like the soul of Atlanta. So that has that sort of classic aesthetic. A couple things that are unique. There's no photography in the books, which I'm not sure there are any travel guides that don't have photos in them. We went the direction of original illustration, where we work with a local artist from each community. Felt like just that was another way to connect at a deeper level. You know, we all have, you know, we're flooded with photography all the time at this point with our phones. So we thought, you know, let's make this a bit more of an artful endeavor. These books, different than most travel guides, they live on coffee tables. People keep these books. They're not disposable. You know, like if I bought another travel guide for a backpacking trip, let's say across Europe, there's a decent chance I'll just, you know, donate it to a secondhand bookshop after that trip. And typically you're not going to see that with Wild Sam. In terms of the interior, we have five main sections. We do a section called the Almanac, which is short excerpts from old newspapers and speeches and letters, trying to sort of, in small bites, bring history of a place to life. We have a section of interviews where we interview 15 locals from all walks of life, all parts of the city, different jobs, races, ages, try to really get a genuine cross-section of the place. We commission at least two, oftentimes three, original essays for each place. We aim for, you know, world-class writers. We've worked with, you know, best-selling novelists and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists. Again, just trying to bring, you know, the highest quality of writing about a place. You know, these aren't travel stories. You know, these are essays about place, which feel different to us. You know, it's not an essay about the 10 best barbecue restaurants, though we do love barbecue. So that's three. In the city guides, we have a section we call maps, where the artist illustrates six different maps to the city. That's for our city guides. We have a section called Bests as well, which is really the place that we give our recommendations. and we give a limited run. You know, I know Monocle sort of appreciates that approach as well. You know, we sort of view less as more when it comes to travel recommendations. We hope the books feel like a close friend, you know, and if you asked a friend, you know, if I asked you, hey, I'm coming to London, what do I need to know? You're not going to give me 50 restaurants. Like, I don't need that.
It's too daunting sometimes.
That's right. Yeah, you're going to tell me five. You know, you're going to write down five on the back of a napkin. So it's more of that curated feel. Those are the city guides. We have a couple other series. We have a series of what we call road trip guides. You know, the road trip is certainly big in America, you know, to take a week or a couple of weeks and, you know, slowly make your way across the country. So we have five books that are, you know, that capture the spirit of a region. So we have a book about the desert Southwest and New England. We launched a book about California recently. And so there's a big section about road tripping in those books that's unique. And yeah, I mean, the through line for the books that makes them different is storytelling. I mean, the books are full of stories.
And finally, Taylor, just like would like to ask, of course, you know, you make travel guides and the moment that we're living in the world is quite difficult for the travel industry and for everyone. But how are you feeling the effect in your life and in your kind of job as well? Because let's be honest, I mean, we can travel, but I think people still very much can enjoy, especially a travel guide like yours, where, as you say, it's not just like the top five things or, you know, they're more into it as well.
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, we've felt it the last 3 months, and it's affected the way we work. You know, I haven't been on an airplane in 3 months, and I don't think I'm going to be on an airplane anytime soon. It's also underlined what I appreciate about travel and why traveling is important. And, you know, part of the thing I love about traveling is the going, is certainly the sort of being in and dropping into just a new, unfamiliar place. You know, that experience often is the most creative and contemplative time. I have the best conversations of my life happen when I'm out in the world somewhere new. That said, I've sort of discovered, you know, with our team, we just really found that it's not just about going, though. It's about understanding and just sort of continuing to learn. You know, we sort of think of ourselves as lifelong learners. And the world is, I mean, someone else smarter than I said this first, but the world is a great teacher. And I would hope that the books themselves, even if you're not on the road, you know, if you bought a book about California and you live in, you know, you live in Atlanta, Georgia, that book is in some ways, there's a transportive element to sort of leaning into the text, even if you're not getting on a plane and flying to LA. And, you know, we think about it every day right now. It's not a good time to travel. It's not the safest call to be out. And we really promote folks choosing the safe path right now. But that doesn't mean you can't continue to stoke your curiosity, you know, and whether that's reading or, you know, listening to the music of a place, watching films of a place, certainly planning that next adventure.
That was Taylor Bruce there. For more on their books, just go to wildsand.com. Well, that's it for this week's show. My thanks to our editor, Nora Hall. If you have any comments or queries, feel free to write to me, Fernando, at fp@monocle.com. And remember, we're back next Saturday at the same time. And of course, you can always listen to it again at monocle.com or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and SoundCloud. We also have a Monocle 24 app. Just go and subscribe to the stack. Before we go, a little song for you. Everly Brothers with All I Have to Do Is Dream. You've been listening to The Stack. I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Until next time, it's goodbye from me. Dream.